and welcome to the latest episode of the In Conversation With eClinical Medicine podcast. I'm Charlotte Rowbottom, Senior Editor, eClinical Medicine. Each month, we'll be interviewing one or more authors of a paper published in our journal, giving them an opportunity to provide a deeper discussion of their research. We're here today with Chris Han to talk about the diagnostic accuracy of low back pain. This comes after the findings of their recent review, which investigated the ability of tests to identify the disc, sacroiliac joint, or the facet joint as the source of low back pain. Chris is a PhD candidate at the Institute of Musculoskeletal Health in Sydney and currently works as a physiotherapist in private practice and sport. He has a research interest in trying to better understand the key issues in how we diagnose and treat low back pain. So your systematic review published in eClinical Medicine investigated the diagnostic accuracy of tests to identify the source of low back pain. Let's begin with some background and rationale for the study. Could you tell us a little about the prevalence of low back pain and which groups are most at risk?
Sure. Thank you for having me, firstly. So the prevalence of back pain we know increases with age, and majority of people with low back pain will improve with time, but roughly 20 to 30% of people won't. And so we know that the prevalence of low back pain, you know, at the age of 80, for example, is almost as high as 40% in males and 35% in females. But what we found in our systematic review was that the prevalence for discogenic pain, for example, was as high as 46%. For facet joint pain, it was 42%. And for sacroiliac joint pain, it was 53%. And so the dominant view at the moment is that 90% of people with back pain, we can't specifically identify a pathology or a cause. And that's why we use, rightfully, the term non-specific like back pain. But we've actually done very little research in diagnostics for low back pain, especially when we compare it to interventional research, such as exercise for non-specific low back pain. So a previous systematic review in 2007 conducted found that very few studies had actually investigated the diagnostic accuracy of tests to identify the disc, the facet, or the SIJ as a source of low back pain. And the meta-analysis was therefore quite limited because there was very little primary data. And so our view is that maybe a subclassification within non-specific low back pain might be possible if we can use features such as the clinical presentation and clinical assessment, which may include diagnostic imaging. And so given the review was roughly 15 years old, we decided to give it an update.
Definitely worth an update there. Thank you for providing that useful background. Yeah, definitely strong rationale and worth doing that update. So let's dig into your analysis a bit more. So could you summarize for our listeners what led you specifically to conducting this analysis and what your key goals and aims were?
Yeah, definitely. So the key goals was really to determine the accuracy of diagnostic tests to identify the disc, the sacroiliac joint, or the facet joint as a potential source of low back pain. And so specifically, we plan to perform a meta-analysis for these three separate potential causes of pain, causes of low back pain.
Brilliant. And now onto your really exciting findings. So your findings challenge the dominant view, the dominant view in the field that it's not possible to reliably locate the source of low back pain, leading to the terminology non-specific low back pain. So could you tell us a bit more about those key findings and what it might mean for the field? You know, what are the broader implications of your great work?
I think the first thing is to set the threshold for how we determine a test was informative. So we used if a positive likelihood ratio was greater than or equal to 2, or a negative likelihood ratio was less than or equal to 0.5, we considered that informative. For tests to identify the disc as the potential source of low back pain, we looked at MRI findings, and what we found was MRI findings of disc degeneration, high intensity zone, annular fissure, modic type 1 changes, modic type 2 changes, increase the likelihood of the disc being the source of low back pain. In terms of physical examination, only centralization of pain was found to increase the likelihood of the disc being the source of low back pain. When we look at the SIJ, if a person had a positive bone scan, the absence of midline low back pain, and a combination of SIJ tests, they all separately increase the likelihood of the SIJ being the source of low back pain. And lastly, for the facet, what we found was we could only perform meta-analysis on one test, and that was uptake of the facet joint on SPECT CT. But there wasn't, unfortunately, enough data to look at clinical examination findings for the facet joint. I think for broader application to our field, you know, the results of our study, they're not ready for clinical application yet. But there is definitely some promise. And so our hope is that with more diagnostic research, we could potentially move beyond the term non-specific low back pain, or maybe we can create subgroups within that, because unfortunately, interventions for non-specific low back pain haven't quite yielded the results we had hoped for over the last 10 to 15 years. Diagnostic research, though, is difficult if, as a community, as a low back pain community, if we aren't open to the idea that a diagnosis might be possible, and only in some people. But this is where I think we need a bit more research. And I think the last thing would be that I think this might provide a few more opportunities to look at whether, if people do have a diagnosis in back pain, does that lead to better information around prognosis, or does it improve a patient's response to a particular treatment? Or could it potentially lead to the development of new and exciting, but of course logical, treatments to target a specific pathology?
Yes, definitely. Thank you for that. And like you say, it's a really important first step for moving away from that non-specific term. So kind of following on from this, are there any caveats that we should bear in mind when we're interpreting these findings? You've already mentioned, you know, it's not ready for clinical interpretation yet. And you also mentioned in the paper itself that the convenient sampling approach in tertiary settings might have inflated some of the prevalence estimates. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Definitely. I think our first point is that the results of our study only provide information on informativeness. So a positive test either increases or decreases, for example, the disc being the source of pain. But this doesn't mean that we're saying there's 100% certainty that these tests will definitely diagnose a specific pathology. So on a continuum of, let's say, I have no idea of what's causing someone's pain, through to the end point, which is I am 100% certain of what's causing your low back pain, the results of our paper really just help us shift along that continuum. And I think that's a really important point, because unfortunately, I think this paper rightfully could be misinterpreted as saying that we can now diagnose back pain, and that's not quite true. It just increases our informativeness. And the second point is that I don't think everyone with low back pain needs a diagnosis. Rather, I think it's for people who have persistent low back pain, who haven't responded to first-line care, that might potentially benefit from further testing, where a diagnosis might then lead to a more targeted treatment. So if we can identify a subgroup of people who might benefit from a diagnosis, then maybe we only seek a diagnosis for this small subgroup of people. And ultimately, the aim would be to reduce over-imaging and therefore lead to a reduction in unnecessary care. So I think one way to look at this is, if we can really find the people that might benefit from a diagnosis, then we won't be spending our time and our resources imaging unnecessarily. As you did mention, though, a lot of the papers included patients that had convenient samples, and they were referred to tertiary settings. So none of the studies in our paper were actually from primary care. And I think that's a really important point, because despite this, most of the index tests that we looked at would still be available in primary care. For example, imaging such as MRI or x-rays and clinical examination. But having convenient samples does mean that we're looking at a very select population who likely have persistent low back pain and back pain that's more severe, that does warrant further investigation. So our results are really only applicable for people in this particular population at the moment. And therefore, in our paper, that's why we talk about people with persistent low back pain rather than acute low back pain. But also a convenient sampling approach does inflate the prevalence estimates, as it doesn't really represent a true sample population, but its impact on diagnostic accuracy, we're not quite sure of yet.
Thank you for that insight, particularly into thinking of this as a continuum of diagnostic accuracy. And like you say, not getting overexcited about what this might mean. Like, it's very exciting, but it doesn't mean, you know, that clinicians are going to be able to use this information straight away. So now onto the future. I know we've spoken about the future a little bit, but I'm interested to hear if you have any further thoughts, kind of in your opinion, what you think the next steps should be to continue on from this research. And do you have any research plans already in motion?
Yeah, I think moving forward now, because there are some tests from our paper that were informative, I think it should be a priority to investigate the utility of these tests. I think it would be nice to say once and for all that they're either useful and we continue down that route, or we find that, hey, these tests aren't relevant and they're not important. And that way we can save ourselves from going down a rabbit hole of research. But I think because our study findings don't directly guide care as we would expect from other areas of medicine or musculoskeletal care when a new diagnosis is formed. But I think future research should look at whether people with a particular diagnosis have different prognosis or they'll likely respond to different treatments. Because ultimately, the diagnosis is only relevant and important based upon these index tests if they can predict prognosis or response to treatment. I think as well, we need to figure out what the optimal threshold is for a positive test. So how informative does a test really need to be for us as clinicians and researchers to justify from providing generic treatment for patients with non-specific low back pain to then shifting towards something more specific? And I think that's a really important question to ask, because if some tests have a likelihood ratio of 2.5, whereas others have a likelihood ratio of 10, I think that gives us different information. But we also hope that the results from our study will lead to more research investigating the utility of these index tests. And for me, I think the exciting thing is I just hope this provides a bit more discussion in this area. I think it's an area that hasn't been focused on for quite a while now, and it would be nice to shift the research focus a little bit and not forget the bio within the biopsychosocial model. In terms of future research, I'm now heading towards the end of my PhD, which is exciting, but I am putting together a Cochrane review with a big group of researchers investigating the diagnostic accuracy of red flags for vertebral fracture. And hopefully that will be published soon. And we also have another review on the way looking at classification systems such as the Start Back tool to provide more targeted treatments for low back pain. And I think ultimately those papers together will give us a bit of an idea of when we should use imaging versus when we shouldn't. Because ultimately we do want to reduce overdiagnosis, and we do want to reduce unnecessary imaging as well.
Amazing. That's a really exciting collection of work to kind of come, and a brilliant and hopeful way to end the podcast.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Chris, for sharing your time and insights into this issue. It's a very important topic and one that we hope to see continuing research in.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of In Conversation With. Remember, you can subscribe to In Conversation With eClinical Medicine wherever you usually get your podcasts.